We go first to the broadcast partner in the Washington, D.C. area, Colonel Bob McGinnis. And Bob, last week we left off talking about the fact that all the world leaders that had met there at the G8, which took place at Camp David, the presidential retreat there in Maryland, were going to travel out to Chicago for the NATO meeting. I want to talk to you about the Iranian nuclear talks that took place in Baghdad in a moment. But first, can you give us kind of a resume or what actually did come out of those meetings, the NATO meetings there in Chicago?
Well, of course, the NATO was primarily focused on Afghanistan and what the future is there. And of course, the president 2 years ago announced his intent to have most of that operation over by 2014. And he was just confirming that. He did announce that we started the transition to Afghan security forces in late 2011, and his intent is by mid 2013 to have that completely turned over. And then our role becomes one of counterterrorism and continued training and support of Afghanistan. He said it wasn't about collecting money and passing the hat, but in fact, that's the key, because it's going to take $4.1 billion each year to sustain Afghan security forces. And I'm not sure, one, we have the appetite for that, and certainly the financially strapped European Union and NATO are being very hesitant. But, you know, a number of people, a number of governments did step up. So they talked about that. They talked about missile defense. They talked about, you know, drones over the Balkans, or Baltics, rather. They talked about Middle East strategy, and there was some discussion on financial issues as well, much like we said on the G8.
Well, from your opinion and your perspective, and you're a man who has been involved in strategy making across this world of ours with your activities there at the Pentagon, do you think this was a good outcome for the NATO meeting?
Well, I have very little confidence in NATO. I think it's an alliance whose time is long past. It's trying to find a purpose. And certainly, when you look at operations like we did in Libya, we paid more than 50% of the freight down there. We did all the real hard stuff, delivery of munitions, which is, of course, the thing that most people were watching on their television. That was done by only 6 countries out of the 28 in NATO. We did all the refueling, all the surface ships, all the intelligence analysis, wrote most of the orders, but put a stamp at the top that said NATO. NATO without us is nothing. Those countries are unwilling to continue to even give, you know, up to the required 2%. Most of them are down close to 1%, and that's no more than a domestic ability to defend, you know, their borders at best. So NATO's demise, I think, could be written today. We keep it only because of the political necessity of going in on coalition operations that we envision in the future.
I think that's a great analysis by Colonel Bob McGinnis. One of our broadcast partners, but in addition to that, a man who does strategic planning, and in major parts of this world, he has been involved in doing that. So the analysis has a solid background. Well, let's switch to Baghdad. A group of world leaders got together there. I got to ask you this question before we even get into the talks. Is it safe enough in Baghdad to bring these world leaders in? Has it settled down there?
Well, that's a matter of perspective, Jimmy. It's a giant city. People get killed daily, but they do in New York City and Washington, D.C. as well. There have been of late some significant explosions taken credit by Al-Qaeda in Iraq. So I suppose if you're willing to pay the price of guarding all these international officials in the green zone, which is where they met, then it's relatively safe. But, of course, you know, last month when these same players met in Istanbul, Turkey, and said, oh, you know, we're all enthusiastic, we're going to get things done, and we're going to Baghdad on the 23rd of May, I think everybody spun it up as saying this is going to be just hunky-dory. Well, you know, back then I said that this would go nowhere. Israelis are right that this is a delaying action. And, of course, what's happened, it's essentially all they agreed to was they'd meet next month in Moscow. And when the people that were on our side brought up the 20% enrichment, that you need to stop it. They balked at that. And oh, by the way, announced in the last day or so, the International Atomic Energy Agency, which was just in the facility in COM, you know, said that they found enriched uranium that was closer to weapons grade. So there are a lot of unknowns here. The Iranians aren't given an inch, and yet we put a smile on it and say, you know, this is just great.
Bob, name the players for us. Who was involved? I know the Iranians were there, of course, but who else was involved?
Oh, yeah, the 5+1, which is the, you know, the U.S., Russia, China, Britain, France, plus Germany is the plus one. And they sat down with, of course, representatives to Ali Khamenei. His representative, of course, is, you know, he's like a chameleon, changing colors all the time on, you know, just what they can and cannot do. That's essentially the players. Of course, you'd have obvious non-players. Israelis are on the outside looking in. And this particular round has drawn, I think, some criticism. Now, of course, the Tehran promises they're going to let the IAEA inspect the Parchin military complex southeast of Tehran. That's, of course, where we believe they've had explosive tests that have a nuclear charge. And, you know, we've been trying to get in there for years. That's the only thing that they did mention, but at least they're talking. And I think that has acquiesced to what this administration wants. And they, of course, are trying to delay the implementation of the oil embargo that's supposed to take effect July 1st. But we'll have to see if that happens.
Yeah, that delay action that's been going on for years. And I do agree with you. The Israelis are right on target on this thing. I don't think they're going to allow this to interfere with what their strategic planning might be as it relates to a preemptive strike. Let's focus just a moment on Russia. Vladimir Putin, he seems to be dominating the new Russian government, putting his people in place to move ahead for the next 6 to 12 years.
You know, I think Putin was actually in charge of the last 6 years anyway, even though Medvedev, he was a puppet in there. And, of course, we saw that evidence here, you know, because Putin stiff-armed the G8 and sent Medvedev as his replacement. But they didn't go to NATO, even though they were invited this past weekend, because they felt slighted on the missile defense issue. But Putin is doing all the things that we knew Putin would do. You know, here last week he had this great missile test, intercontinental ballistic missile test that has a fifth generation component, which has some people understandably worried. He appointed a tough cabinet. He has laid out a strategic vision. He is now, next week, going to launch to Germany and France and talk to Merkel and others about financial issues. And of course, they're wrapped up on the Eurozone crisis. And they're, of course, tethered to the oil that they depend upon Russia providing, though they're trying to, you know, minimize the impact that has. So Putin, I think, is filling his oats. He's really moving in a direction where Russia is becoming far more influential than it has been since the fall of the Iron Curtain. And that's, of course, part of his vision.
Give me just a few moments, if you will, maybe 30 seconds or so. Go back to Iraq. It looks like to me, I see a report that Iraq is concerned about protecting their oil facilities. This is the way they believe they can rebuild their war-torn nation. And I understand they're seeking drones to help protect these oil facilities. How is the progress coming along with the production of oil? And indeed, are they going to have to revert to drones to protect that area?
Well, Iraq, of course, probably has the second leading reserves of oil in the world. They have facilities on the Persian Gulf, which they pump the oil, and they have a lot of pipelines, which have been very vulnerable for more than a decade. Drones just provide a mechanism for monitoring the safety of those facilities that are extensive. Otherwise, you have to have thousands of people doing this. And the technology for drones is available from a host of people. Israelis sell them, the Chinese do, we do, and others do. So I'm not surprised. This is just a prudent security activity by them to protect their national resources.
And just one quick answer. Groups are concerned here in America about them arming, the government arming domestic drones. Is that a possibility, yes or no?
Of course.
It is, and they should be concerned, right?
Well, they should be concerned, and especially on the southwest border. Now, of course, if we're not doing nearly enough on the southwest border, in my opinion, and it's an incredibly dangerous place, and we ought to be very concerned about transnational terrorism as well as syndicates down there.
Bob McGinnis, Colonel McGinnis, he's our broadcast partner looking at geopolitical activities around this world, helping us to stay up to date and have the details behind the headlines on all of these activities. Bob, thank you so very much, my good friend. We'll talk again next week.
Well, thank you, Jimmy.